once again to our program, Salvation History, the Old Testament, the story of creation, fall, and the beginning of the redemption of mankind. Our guest again is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, the chaplain at the Carmelite Monastery at the entrance to Allendale and the chaplain for John Paul II Catholic High. Ron, welcome back once again. We've gone through God's selecting Abraham and then covenant with Isaac, covenant with Jacob, the two sons of Isaac, Esau and Jacob. Jacob's gone, is out trying to find a wife among his kinsmen back in Iraq or in Mesopotamia. He's found two wives, Leah and Rebekah, and they're ready to come back home the long journey, 400 miles from Haran or Mesopotamia or Iraq back to Canaan or to what is now Palestine or Israel. So after his time of service was up, Jacob, he became very wealthy. So what happened when he returned home?
Eventually God commanded Jacob in a dream to return to the land of his birth. And in response, he secretly, he left for Canaan secretly with his wives, 11 children, servants, herds and flocks and other animals. When Laban found out that Jacob had left with his family and possessions, he pursued him with his kinsmen. In other words, he was pretty upset by this. He thought that Jacob was trying to slip out on him, which I guess he was.
Okay.
Yeah. When he caught, but he was going, of course, at God's command. When he caught up with him, he asked Jacob why he had treated him so ungratefully. Jacob defended his behavior, and he said, quote, "These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands. He rebuked you last night." That's the end of the quote. That's in Genesis 31. Because God had told Laban in a dream not to say anything good or bad to Jacob, and also because he was unwilling to turn on his daughters and grandchildren, he made a covenant with Jacob in which each agreed not to ever harm the other.
Well, that's encouraging. How about the famous story of Jacob wrestling with an angel on the way home to his homeland?
This event happened the day and the night before Jacob and his family and flocks and herds reached their homeland in Canaan. As he approached his homeland, he became very fearful of his brother Esau. So he sent messengers to his brother, whom he had wronged about 20 years before. And after praying for God's protection, he separated his wives and children from the main group to protect them. And for added insurance, he sent many of his best animals to his brother, hoping to placate his anger. To give you some idea of the wealth that Jacob had accumulated in Mesopotamia from his uncle Laban, it describes, Genesis 32 describes the peace offering that he sent to Esau. And I'll quote from that. "So he lodged there that night and took from what he had with him a present for his brother Esau. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milch camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 he-asses," end of quote. That's a lot.
Wow.
And that was probably, you know, just a tenth of his, or, you know, a third or a fourth, or one, you know, a tenth, no more than a tenth of his full flock. The following day, Esau met him with 400 of his men. That must have really scared Jacob. But instead of harming Jacob and his family, he embraced him and welcomed them. And as restitution, Jacob offered his brother many animals. And after refusing, and I just, you know, listed them, and after refusing to accept them at first, he finally accepted the gift.
Okay, so at least there was peace between Esau and Jacob. How about the encounter with the angel?
Yes, that took place the night before. Genesis 32 states that, quote, "The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched the hollow of his thigh. And Jacob's thigh was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, 'Let me go, for the day is breaking.' But Jacob said, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' And he said to him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Jacob.' Then he said, 'Your name shall no more be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men, and have prevailed.'" To put it another way, because he prevailed in his wrestling match with God, Jacob received the name of Israel, which means persevere with God. Then Jacob asked him, "Tell me, I pray, your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of the thigh. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh on the sinew of the hip. That story is told in Genesis 32. One Jewish source says of this practice today among the Jews that among the dietary laws is the rule that the muscle or sinew of the thigh must not be eaten, and the sinew is skillfully extracted from the meat of the animal, a process known as porging, before it is sold as kosher meat. In some communities, because of the difficulties of porging correctly the hindquarters when animals are not eaten at all, the closest kosher slaughterhouse I know of, meatpacking house, is over in Indianapolis. I had a friend years ago who used to go over there about once every month to buy all their kosher meat, a Jewish friend, and so I learned quite a bit about that whole. It has to be killed a certain way. It has to be a certain type of animal. It has to be killed a certain way. All kinds of things. And this is just part of that process of making meat kosher.
And that's a part of where it's coming from.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the 12 tribes of Israel, which, of course, are so famous, come from Jacob, now called his new name Israel. Tell about us about the 12 tribes and how that began to be assembled.
The formation of the 12 tribes is, I think, a fascinating one for Jews and Christians alike. And as I just mentioned, Jacob already had 11 of his sons before returning to Canaan. By Leah, he had 6 sons and a daughter, sons Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, those are the 6 sons, and a daughter named Dinah. He had 2 more sons by Leah's handmaid, Zilpah, and their names were Gad and Aser. Leah had given her to Jacob after she quit conceiving and bearing children. And then he and his beloved Rachel had 1 son in Mesopotamia, named Joseph, and upon returning to Canaan, another son, Benjamin. And Rachel tragically died in giving birth to Benjamin. And the 12 sons were rounded out by the 2 sons he had with Rachel's handmaid, Bila. Their names were Dan and Naphtali. Every one of those names are very significant, and we'll be coming across them from now on till the end of the Old Testament. She had given Bila Rachel had given Bilhah to Jacob, with which to foster children when she was barren herself, before she bore Joseph and Benjamin. Much later, two of Joseph's sons joined the patriarchs with Jacob's blessing. So we don't have a tribe of Joseph. We have a tribe of his sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Many believe that the 12 sons or the 12 tribes of Israel came from Jacob and Rachel. But as we have seen, it's far more complicated than that. And as the story unfolds during the series, we will see how each of the tribes derived from sons of Israel with four different women played very important roles in salvation history.
So the 12 tribes of Israel are from the 12 sons of Jacob, but by four different women.
That's correct.
Okay. It is a little complicated. Since this is such a complicated issue, how can you clarify the line of David from Abraham to David? It seems like it gets pretty confusing.
Yes, it does. And it might help to provide a little genealogy here. Abraham had a brother, Nahor, who had a son, Bethuel. We've already mentioned them, who had a son, Laban, and a daughter, Rebekah, who married Isaac. Now, I know people are not going to remember this. You almost have to have a chart or a graph, and I sure. use charts and graphs when I teach.
Right.
A lot of them, in fact. Almost everything we're discussing here, I use charts and graphs in my classroom experience.
Well, I think that's good. Don't worry. To our listeners, don't worry if you can't remember all this.
Well, Rebekah and Isaac, they had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Therefore, Laban, their mother's brother, was Jacob and Esau's uncle. Now, Laban had two daughters named Leah and Rachel. Eight of the founders of the 12 tribes of Israel resulted from Jacob's marriage to Leah and Rachel. The other four founders resulted from Jacob's marriages to Leah and Rachel's maidservants. And the issue can really be complicated when one tries to explain the family relationship further. For example, Leah and Rachel are Rebekah's nieces because she is their father's sister. Although Rachel was Jacob's most beloved wife and mother to his favorite son Joseph, who was to play such an important role in salvation history, let's not forget, and this I think is very important, that Leah, who was the mother of Judah, from whom David would descend, and through David the Messiah himself. She was also the mother of Levi, from whom Moses and Aaron descended, and of course the Jewish priesthood came into being. So actually it was children of the six sons that Jacob had, or Israel had with Leah, turned out to be far more important in salvation history, except for Joseph, of course, who was the favorite of Rachel's.
Okay, so you, as you said so nicely, you need a chart to follow that, where you can look at it and see it more easily. But since everyone has heard the famous story of Joseph and his brothers and their jealousy towards his brothers, how does this story of Joseph, who was the son of Jacob and Rachel, favorite son of Jacob and Rachel, how does this story fit into the whole idea of salvation history?
Well, because he was a son of his old age. Jacob loved Joseph more than his other sons. Now, he wasn't the last son. A lot of people are under the impression that Joseph was the youngest of Jacob's sons. But actually, Benjamin, little Benji, was the youngest. I think another reason he loved Joseph so much was that he was a child of his marriage with his beloved Rachel. You might recall who had died during the childbirth. On one occasion, he gave his favorite son a beautiful robe. Everybody knows the story about the many-colored robe, which increased the other son's envy and hatred. And another reason they hated him, he was a little tattletale, telling his father things that his brothers and their families had done wrong. And the hatred was intensified all the more when Joseph was about 17 at the time. And he told the family a couple of dreams he had had, which portrayed him as a leader over them. He described one dream where he and his brothers were binding sheaves of grain in the field, when his sheaves stood upright and all of theirs gathered around and bowed down to him.
This is a dream he had.
Yes, this is a dream he had.
Okay.
Now, he described another dream where the sun, moon, and 11 stars all bowed to him, down to him. It didn't take too much of an imagination to interpret the sun as his father, the moon as his mother, and the stars, the 11 stars, as his brothers. And even his indulgent father told him to keep his dreams to himself after this. And this was just about all the brothers could take from their father's favorite son.
Okay. There was a musical entitled Joseph and His Technicolor Coat, which was about this multicolored coat that the father, Jacob, had given to his favorite son, Joseph, which, again, as you mentioned, increased. It's Technicolor Dream Coat. There was real hatred building up with the brothers against Joseph.
That's right. The story of how his brothers proposed to kill him is legendary, and I won't go into the details of that story, but they would have done so, except the eldest brother, Reuben, who was one of the children. He was the oldest, and he was one of the children that came from Jacob's marriage with Leah. He convinced his others not to kill their brother, but to put him in a pit instead. Now, his intention was to come back later and free him, when he did come back, Joseph was gone, because the other brothers, at the urging of Judah, had sold him into slavery to some Ishmaelite merchants on their way to Egypt. Now, of course, Judah saved his life, though, because they were going to kill him then.
Right.
Reuben's gone, you see. And they were going to kill him then. Judah said, "Oh, no, don't do this. He's our brother." And so instead of killing him, let's sell him to these Ishmaelites that are on their way. They're merchants, traders, camel caravan on the way to Egypt. And so in a sense, you could say that actually Judah saved his life in that sense. Jacob was led to believe that Joseph had been killed by wild animals and was inconsolable because of his loss. I think it's significant that Judah was the one who saved Joseph's life while he was in the pit, because it was through his tribe that the Messiah was to come to save the world about 1800 or so years later. And this is the story, I think, in brief, of how the Israelites came to be in Egypt. And this happened around 1800, 1750, something like that, B.C.
Okay. Well, let's pick up the story then of the Israelites in Egypt.
Upon arriving in Egypt, the Ishmaelites sold Joseph to the Pharaoh's captain of the guard. Because God was with Joseph, his master prospered, and Joseph was put in charge of the household. The master's wife tried unsuccessfully, though, to seduce him several times. But when he fled her attempt one time, leaving his outer garment, she told her husband that Joseph had tried to seduce her. But he fled when she cried out. And as punishment for his alleged offense, the master had him put in jail, with where Pharaoh's prisoners were kept. This story is told in Genesis 39.
Very fascinating story.
Yes. Well, while in the prison, Joseph interpreted dreams for two of Pharaoh's officials who were in prison also at the time, because they'd fallen somehow out of favor with the king. One was the chief butler and the other was the chief baker. And he interpreted the dreams as meaning the butler would be freed and restored to his position in Pharaoh's household in 3 days, and the baker would be executed instead. And both dreams came true. And in accordance with Joseph's interpretation, the butler was restored to the king's household and the baker was executed. That story is told in Genesis 40.
Okay, now how was Joseph able to find favor with Pharaoh, even though he's in prison at the time.
Well, the butler had forgotten the promise he had made to Joseph that when he was restored to his position in the Pharaoh's household, he would have him released. He didn't remember Joseph until 2 years later, when the king had a couple of disturbing dreams himself. The butler told the king how Joseph had successfully interpreted his and the baker's dreams, so the king fetched Joseph to interpret his as well. And after listening to Pharaoh describe his dreams, Joseph interpreted them as meaning that, and I'll quote from Genesis here, quote, "There will be 7 years of great plenty throughout the land, all the land of Egypt. But after them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of that famine which will follow, for it will be very grievous." And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now, therefore, let Pharaoh select a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land, and to take the fifth part of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and lay up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine, which are to befall the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. End of quote. That is found in Genesis 41. Well, because Joseph was very wise enough to interpret his dreams, Pharaoh made him second in command to prepare for the famine to come. And during the 7 years of plenty, Joseph had the surplus stockpiled in storage bins to make ready for the 7 years of famine that was to follow.
In grade school at Lady of Lourdes in the first grade, we read that story about Joseph. We had a Bible history, you know, and I remember the dream of Pharaoh. 7 fat cows came up out of the Nile, and then 7 very lean cows. And that's what Joseph interpreted, 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. But isn't it amazing that how stories can stay in a person's mind from their earliest years? And that's why those Bible history books, I think, are so helpful to young children to get an early acquaintance with some of the great stories of the Old Testament. Well, tell us about the story of Joseph, how he was reunited with his family, which is a very stirring story.
Jacob sent his sons to Egypt to buy grain when the famine did hit their area. And he didn't allow Benjamin, though, the youngest, to go with them. Benjamin, of course, now took the place of Joseph as his favorite. This story is told in Genesis 43. To make a long story short, when Joseph's brothers came seeking food during the famine, he tested them by accusing them of being spies. Although he recognized them, they didn't recognize him, of course, because he was much older now, and they couldn't have imagined that he would hold such an exalted position in the land of Pharaoh. Actually, he was about the second, number two man in Egypt. Keep in mind that Joseph was dressed like an Egyptian nobleman, and he spoke Egyptian through an interpreter. Moreover, they would have been afraid to look directly at the face of one so high in office. In other words, they're kneeling before him, you know, and they don't dare look at the guy in the face. After they told him about their background to try and convince him they weren't spies, he held Simeon as a hostage and sent the others back with grain to retrieve their brother, Benjamin. Supposedly being able to produce their youngest brother would confirm the truth of their story. Of course, this is a ruse, you see. Of course, obviously, Joseph was playing with his brothers. He also had the money they had brought with them to purchase grain put secretly back into their grain sacks. But this frightened them when they found the money later on, because they thought it might be a pretext for them to be enslaved later for theft. And when they got back to Canaan, of course, Jacob was extremely reluctant to let them return to Egypt with his youngest son, but relinquished when they ran out of grain again. He did not do so, though, until Judah promised personally to be responsible for his youngest brother. Again, I think it's significant that the founder of the tribe from which the Messiah was to come protects his brother again. After loading the brothers with gifts for the king's chief minister and giving them a double portion of the money to return to him, he sent his sons off to Egypt. This story is told in Genesis 43.
Okay, let's go because our time is running out and the story has a wonderful ending. How did Joseph receive his brothers?
Well, this is a classic story. When they returned to Egypt, Joseph was overjoyed to see them with Benjamin, yet he still didn't disclose his identity to them. After they gave Joseph the gifts that Jacob had sent, Jacob asked them about their welfare and that of their father. And then he invited them to a sumptuous meal. Genesis says of this event, quote, "And they set before him the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table. But Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him." Well, after providing them with grain and return of their money, Joseph sent them on their way home. But unknown to them, he had his servant hide his silver cup in Benjamin's sack. Then he sent his servant after them to fetch or to search their sacks. And when finding the cup in Benjamin's sack, the servant made all of them return to the palace to face Joseph. And of course, Joseph was using this deception to use as a pretext to keep Benjamin as a hostage as they returned to Canaan to retrieve his father and the rest of the family. In other words, Joseph wanted to be sure that his father was going to get there, and this was the only way he could really assure that is by keeping that little Benji there during that time. So after Judah told Joseph that it would kill his father if his favorite son didn't return with them and offered to take his place, Joseph can contain himself no more. So after sending all of his Egyptians out of his presence, he revealed himself to his brothers. And this story is told in Genesis 45.
Okay, and what a marvelous revelation it was. They couldn't believe that this second in command in Egypt was Joseph, their brother, who then sent into slavery.
Certainly, he's in the Pharaoh's palace dressed like a Pharaoh himself.
Right. And you know, the famous line that's always quoted from Joseph was, "What you intended for evil, God intended for good." And it's a beautiful story of how that providence of God works out.
How he takes evil and turns it into good.
Evil and turns into good. We've been dealing with fascinating stories of the Old Testament, Book of Genesis, about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, his 12 sons, and how they come down into Egypt and find Joseph as second in command. And what a marvelous story it is. So may God bless you all, always, and in always.